The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It's Wednesday, November 20th, 2014, and welcome to the Alien Invasion number 125, a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me, as always, Brad Ludwig, Anessa Moyens. How you guys doing?
Pretty darn good. How about yourself?
Finally got snow here in Ottawa.
I know. People have been complaining about that in Ottawa.
Yeah, it's been pretty dry. Because it sucks that it gets cold and there's no snow on the ground. Because at least when it's cold, you have snow to make it feel like winter. But when it's just cold, it's cold. It kind of sucks.
I'd kind of rather it just be cold.
But you're from Texas. That's my only defense. That's the only comeback I have. You're from Texas.
It's true.
Well, at least I'm not whining that I'd rather it be hot.
Yeah, but give it time. Wait until mid-January. I think you'll be saying that.
I don't know. I've got a few years behind that were just mostly heat, so it might take a couple of winters before I start saying that.
Oh, you've got all the heat built up. I see. I see what you're saying. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to why we're all here tonight or today or whenever you're watching or listening to us. This is the show where we talk about extraterrestrials, aliens from other places in the galaxy or the universe or other dimensions sometimes, and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, real life. I could go on, but I won't. The show is divided into three sections: the news, the craft corner, that's our spotlight of a certain kind of alien spacecraft, and our pick for the week, or picks for the week. If you want to watch us do the show live, record it. We do it mostly every Wednesday. Just follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus. We'll tell you when and where that's going to be, either at galacticnetcasts.com/live, or watch us live also at youtube.com/galacticnetcasts, or we also put the archived version of the show there as well. So, if you guys are ready, let's get the show on the road.
In the news,
headlines for the week for aliens, and Nessa's got the first story.
I do. So, we all know, or at least most people should know by now, that the European Space Agency landed on a comet last week.
Exciting.
Of course, there are people that disagree that this actually happened. There are conspiracy theories. There are people that disagree that, you know, we landed on the moon. They disagree about Elvis being dead. They disagree about all sorts of things. And this, apparently, is one of them. According to an email published on the website UFOSightingsDaily.com, which does a regular trade in alien sightings, and we've probably mentioned them a few times or mentioned stories from their site a few times on this show. But anyway, the mission is a part of the European Space Agency and NASA cover-up to disguise the comet's true alien nature.
Ooh.
So this is someone writing an email. The email allegedly from a secret whistleblowing employee of the ESA, European Space Agency, accuses the agency of blatant cover-ups in wanting to land on the speeding comet and attaches photos which claim to reveal, quote, the true inner workings of Comet 67P. It states, do not think for one moment, all caps, that a space agency would suddenly decide to spend billions of dollars to build and send a spacecraft on a 12-year journey to simply take some close-up images of a randomly picked-out comet floating in space. Comet 67P is not a comet. The letter continues. Some 20 years ago, NASA began detecting radio bursts from an unknown origin out in space. It would later be known that these had likely come from the direction of the now named Comet 67P. Excuse me. It does show signs on its outside of machine-like parts and unnatural terrain. Ending in an ominous note, it adds, whatever this object is, it did not ask to be found or scrutinized. Commenting on the article, contributor Scott Waring, whom we've also mentioned on the show more than a few times, also said he believed the signals being emitted from the comet were a greeting to humans. If it was a warning, they would not allow the ESA craft to have landed, he wrote. I believe the landing of the ESA craft was the equivalent of a first handshake. They will make another move soon, probably. Alien structures are on the comet. I don't believe it's natural. Yet this far from the only extraterrestrial conspiracy theory put forward about 67P and the ESA mission. In September, BP Earthwatch published a video showing brand new high-res images taken from the Rosetta spacecraft, and they appeared to show two UFOs flying over the comet and a transmission tower-like structure built on the surface, potentially emitting the mysterious radio signals which have been picked up by the ESA. These images are not normal, says the video voiceover. Yeah, they're probably really lousy Photoshop too, thus not normal. ESA's confirmation that the comet had been emitting a mysterious song has fueled theories that it is in fact an alien ship and the warbling is an extraterrestrial attempt at communication. Writing on the website UFOSightingsDaily.com, Scott Waring professed that, in my opinion, this is not a code. It is how a species of aliens communicate to one another without speaking, a form of telepathy put into primitive radio signals. It is the only way the species can communicate to us. This is their thoughts. They don't talk. Waring added, getting a copy of the full message and then translating it should be of utter importance. Is it a message of greetings, or is it a warning of what's to come? The people of the world need to find out. So,
are you guys scared?
No.
Although, Brad did point out that the noise from the comet does resemble the noise from the Predator, that the Predator makes.
I saw that observation online as well. Somebody else made that observation.
Uh-huh. So maybe the Predator exists and it's coming to Earth. And then, yes, we should probably be scared.
Maybe the Predators were based on something real.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe this is the rescue mission.
It's too bad that we don't have that sound, because that sound sounds cool. I like it. It's awesome.
It does.
I'm surprised that the internet hasn't made a song out of it yet.
That's something that I posted, too, on Facebook. I'm like, dubstep version in 3, 2, 1.
Yeah. It'll be made into a song if it hasn't already, and we just haven't found it yet. So,
have you guys seen enough pictures to notice anything weird? Like, does the comet look like not a natural structure?
Well, the thing about... Oh, hang on. I've got the Predator sound here.
You think?
I think. There we go. Oh, come on. There we go.
Okay. Now I wish... Now find the song or the sound from the comet. We'll compare the two.
We most certainly will.
This is thrilling stuff right here.
Yeah, this is the in-between of the awesome. Huh? Yeah.
Right. The one thing that I wanted to point out was I think the comet looks like one of those, I forget what they're called, but they're the big trend when it comes to working out these days. They look, you hold them with both hands or one hand, I guess. You could do it with either.
The kettlebells?
Yeah, it looks like one giant kettlebell to me, at least.
I don't know. Like, the way that they keep showing it in comparison to, like, other cities and its size, like, hey, here's Comet 67P, and here's Los Angeles or New York or whatever city. And just the angle and stuff, for some reason, it makes me think of a rubber duck made out of rock.
Yeah, I can definitely see that as well.
So, it's like, I guess, looking at a cloud and you try to pick out a shape from it.
Anessa, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was thinking the same thing.
So, it's like a Rocky Rorschach test out in space.
They're going to replace it. They're going to replace the inkblot test with the Comet P. What is it?
Comet 67P.
67P.
Comet 67P test. Oh, wait a second.
Do I need a cup for this?
Did you guys see?
Okay,
did you guys
got it.
Okay, lay it on us. Oh my God, you're right. It's exactly the same as the Predator sound. Can you go back to the Predator? Or is that too hard?
Actually, give me a second here.
Okay.
I could probably just pull it up on my computer.
I was going to say, did you guys see the size comparison chart comparing the Comet with fictional...
I could play them both at the same time.
Oh, my God. That's so eerie. Yeah, I think we're definitely onto something here. Or they're onto something. Yeah. See, that could be the mashup. You add up.
I think it'd be like a game. You have to pick out the Predator sound versus the Comet sound.
We got a whole thing here. We should start a website with nothing but like things based on the Comet. We can do the Rorschach test. We can do the dubstep Predator sound thing. Yeah, I think we're onto something.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys see the spaceship comparison chart to the Comet? Like, the only thing that came close to it is the Death Star in size.
Mm-mm.
That thing is huge. It's massive.
It looks very massive.
I don't know if we talked about this, but they speculated that because of its shape, they're fairly certain it's two comets that collided and fused together.
Oh, interesting. That could be an interesting test case to study if they can get that lander up and working again. I know they got a lot of results, but including biomatter, I heard. But it'd be interesting to find out if they could figure out just by testing the soil that it is two comets, that's how it came together like that.
Yep.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much, Inessa. Let's hope it's not an invasion force of the Guten Army. That's what I'm worried about.
Fingers crossed.
All right.
Okay, because the Zubans have our back.
Yeah. I forgot about that. All right. Well, how about the Kree? Do the Kree have our back? Are the Kree evil? Tell us more, Brad.
We talked about this in a previous episode. I don't remember which one exactly, but as soon as I saw the alien from the Tahiti episode, I think that was the name of the episode, Tahiti.
Yeah, I don't think you mentioned what we're talking about.
I'm sorry. I should back that up. The title of this story, and this is from comicbook.com, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Alien Race Officially Revealed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I made my conjecture as soon as I think the episode right after that Tahiti episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. happened from the first season.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that, yeah.
And this is in TV Guide. Executive producer Jeffrey Bell confirmed that the alien that was in the tube where Coulson had gotten the serum that helped bring him back to life, Jeffrey Bell has confirmed that it is a Kree alien. Now, we've seen the Kree in Guardians of the Galaxy. Ronan the Accuser, the blue-skinned guy, he is a Kree.
Okay.
This is going to be the revelation is actually going to happen in the December 2nd episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the episode called Ye Who Enter Here. So here's the rest of the deal, though, which is really fascinating. For those of you who've been following Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., this is sort of spoilery. So you might want to stop listening.
Yeah, if you're behind, a few episodes or haven't started watching it this season, then definitely turn it off for a while.
First off, you're missing out because all of the kerfuffle from the loss of viewers that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had with last season and then it kind of building up to the second Captain America movie, Captain America Winter Soldier, they've only been increasing in ratings with each episode this season. So it's definitely on an upswing. And if you like action, adventure, and intrigue, this has gotten really good. But here's the rest of the details on this story. Bell was quoted as saying, our people don't know anything about the Kree. by our people he means the characters in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., or that there's a planet full of them. What they do know is that the strange carving created by Coulson after he was injected with the Kree serum are actually the map of a city, and they need to find that city before Hydra does. And that's one of the key pieces or the key plot arcs in this season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But the thing is, where is this city, and is it on Earth, or is this city on another planet? Now, the Kree are the prominent blue-skinned alien race in the Marvel Universe, and fans have long suspected, like myself, that that alien that we saw in Tahiti episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was a Kree. And Chloe Bennett actually confirmed in a story, in an interview last year, saying that, yep, it's a Kree, and then I think somebody slapped her hand after that admission, and she kind of went, well, and backed away from it. But no, this executive producer is officially on the record, who works for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., saying that it is a Kree. And we know, by we, I mean comic book nerds like myself and people who have been checking out stuff seriously on the internet, know that the Kree are connected to the Inhumans. Now, the Inhumans are going to be getting a movie in 2017, 2018?
That sounds about right, yeah. I have many questions, by the way, and I can't wait to ask
them. November 2nd of 2018 is when that movie's scheduled to come out.
Okay. Inquiry, Brad yes. Ludwig. Last night's episode, or whenever you were listening to this it was last night when we're recording this now, one of the characters grows old and he gets a bunch of organs from a person that doesn't age, transplanted it into his body, and he becomes young again. Now, do you think that has to do anything with the Kree, or is that something completely different?
Okay. In the comic books, the Kree came to Earth a long time ago and could care less for the humans that were here, but they were looking to make weapons. Creature-based weapons, living weapons. And so they devised a way to create what we now know as Inhumans. There is a mist that could be, you would expose somebody to it, and if they were or had the proper genes, they would survive. It's the Terrigen mist. That's what it is. And if you survive contact with it, you are given powers. If you don't have the right genes, you are killed. And that's just the deal. So there's conjecture right now, for those of who have been watching this season, there is an alien artifact that has been called the Obelisk. It's about the size of, I don't know.
An anvil, a small anvil.
Yeah, I guess so. A lot lighter than an anvil, yeah. That's for sure. But if you touch it and you aren't the right person, it petrifies you. It turns you to stone. If you have the right, if you're the right person, the doctor who has been kind of keeping an eye on this obelisk thing, says if it chooses you, you get to live. And that's what we see. If the right person touches it, you get to see these hidden markings that are either engraved on it in a special fashion or they glow orange. You can actually see the ruins of this writing on it. But if you're not the right person, it does nothing, and you just start to turn to stone immediately. So I think that they might be doing, and because we know that, the Kree have been introduced into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, of which Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is definitely a part of, and they can continue that storyline, and we might find out more about what's coming up with the Inhumans, or, maybe we're all wrong, and maybe this is something else, but this just seems to be the most likely thing, because we've seen that both Coulson and Skye have been exposed to this. I haven't seen the episode yet, so
oh, you haven't?
I only know, No, I've read a little bit of information about the episode.
Oh, crap.
No, that's fine. Because I don't want to say anything more because I know that would make Anessa very angry.
Oh, you can say all you want. I've kind of been spacing out just so I wouldn't have to hear anything that I might not want to because,
Yeah. So, and for those of, this episode just came out, so I don't want to.
I can always just take my headset off if you want to be like, warning, spoilers, and then wave
it. Just go la 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 la.
No, and for our listeners who maybe haven't been checking out Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they really should because this, and if you're into aliens and if you're listening to this, you probably are. This season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is definitely for you. So it's definitely going to tie into the rest of what's going on with the future movies, I think, of the MCU and definitely start expanding the universe for the cinematic universe, making it, again, more Guardians of the Galaxy, like we said before, opened a door and kind of fleshed out that whole MCU world a bit more by taking it to the cosmic scale, and I think that they're just kind of reinforcing that with the show.
So. And you mentioned Guardians, of course. I saw an article, didn't read it, but I saw the headline that Chris Pratt was interviewed by somebody, and he said he'd be interested if he was asked to do a guest spot on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Somehow.
In a hot second.
Yeah. So they got to figure out a way of getting the Guardians back to Earth, you know? Do you think they'd do that before the movie? Like, do you think they'd actually try to bring the Guardians of the Galaxy, or at least his character, back to Earth before they would try it on the big screen?
I really don't think that they will. Actually, if anything, it might be maybe a video.
Oh.
Or some pre-recorded thing, or a live feed or something that they would stumble into, but I honestly don't think that I don't think that they would bring him physically there into that.
Okay.
Not yet.
All right. I was just curious. All right. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s getting so good. It's been good from the start, but it's getting really good. And I like the whole spy vibe this year. It feels like a James Bond movie every episode, sort of, but with that whole comic book twist and alien twist as well. I like it a lot.
Yeah, them moving to a later time slot is one of the best things that could have happened to that show.
All right.
That and watching, and granted, this isn't Aliens, but Constantine, which is another comic book show, also a late night show, and the things that they can get away with at a 10 o'clock spot, ridiculous.
Yeah.
So... later shows that are on later in the evening are usually going to be far more kick-ass. So check it out.
All right, thank you, Brad. Let's move on to the third and final story. A departure from what I usually tackle on the alien invasion. I really couldn't find a good story this week, so I did just a basic Google search, and I came up with a video for a toy from Hasbro. I think it's Fisher-Price. Fisher-Price. It was for this thing called the Battle Rover. It's $120, but it's a kick-ass toy. It's a toy that I would have liked when I was a kid. So I did some more digging, and I found that Fisher-Price has a whole line of alien-related toys. Not just the Battle Rover, but things that you can kind of incorporate with the Battle Rover. So, parents... Or kids, if you're listening, or grown-ups who like toys, maybe put some of these on your shopping list. So are you ready? Are you ready to write these things down?
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right. So Battle Rover, like I said, $120, a giant playset vehicle with removable space shuttle in one. It has everything, and this is all the write-up from their website. So if it sounds like this is an advertisement, for the product, it's exactly what it is. It has everything a young space explorer needs to create the most out-of-this-world adventures, including projectiles, disc launchers, an alien-detecting chamber that lights up, 19 lights, and over 200 unique sound effects and phrases. a transforming and removable space shuttle with its own projectile launchers and sounds, a kid-activated control panel, pull-out drill, saw blade and crane, three figures in a small vehicle. And apparently, it's got some kind of weird chip in it. It can interact with other toys, other related toys from Fisher-Price. So some of the toys that it may be able to interact with include the Tentaclore. It's $30, so it's a lot cheaper than the Battle Rover. It's the ultimate alien enemy in the battle between humans and aliens. Place figures in his tentacles, and he'll hold them in his grip. Squeeze the handle on his back to watch him whip the figures back and forth and hit them with his fly swatter. His giant eyeball moves back and forth following the action. Push down on his brain to open his mouth. So it's this, you know, the aliens from The Simpsons? Those big,
Yeah, they totally look like it. I was just Googling Tentaclore.
It looks very much like it. And he's got like, his head is kind of like open and you can see his brain. So you just push down on his brain and his mouth opens. Place figures in his mouth to hear his chomping sound effects. Tentaclore even responds with cool sound effects with other Imagine Next spaceships. So the line of toys that you want to kind of integrate together are the Imagine Next toys and Imagine Next spaceships. They can fire at him and he'll make those sound effects. So the third alien-related toy from Fisher-Price that I found, it's called the Ion Alien Headquarters, only $20, so we're going down in price. We went from $120 to $30 to $20. Can the evil aliens protect their headquarters from the brave and daring humans? Move the eyeball scanner up and down to scan figures and detect if they're humans or aliens. Turn the bottom disc to open the front door and let figures inside. Turn the disc near the lookout tower to move the tentacles back and forth to scare away intruders. Press the level and back to activate a snapping tentacle that can knock over figures trying to enter the door. If humans are detected infiltrating the headquarters, your little space explorer can move the launcher throughout the playset and fire projectiles at him or trap them in the tentacle jail cell. So this stuff sounds freaking awesome. I wish I was a kid again.
Yeah, a lot of it is kind of adorable. Like I'm looking at images, and yeah, because the Tentaclore is like Kang and Kodos from The Simpsons in appearance. Well, except they're purple, and he's got a fly swatter, and these weird little neon green feet. So,
but it's definitely the same vibe as the ones from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you've got like the Iron Claw, and I don't know if this ends up being packaged together as the $120 thing, but there's an Iron Claw, and it's like a little, I don't know, like not really an orbiter, but it's a sphere with a couple of what looks to be like rocket packs that would be pointing downwards, and then it's got feet, like three feet that resemble a claw from the not vending machines, but you know, like the crane.
Yeah,
game.
Yeah, the games. Yeah, you pick up the thing.
Your quarter. It kind of reminds me of that a little bit.
Okay.
And then you've got like this little dude standing next to it.
Yeah, that poor guy that's like standing next to the Tentaclore. I feel sorry for him. He's about to get eaten, chomped,
or swatted by a fly swatter. I don't know what's up with the fly swatter.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they think that all humans are like pesky flies.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Ooh, there's a page two. Like, I've discovered more.
Yeah, Nessa's pretty excited here.
Pods and exosuits for the little dude.
Yeah, I totally want to be a kid again. This stuff is awesome.
I love that trigger on his back to operate the fly swatter arm. That's awesome.
I just want to push down on his brain so it opens his mouth.
So, now this is pretty cool. If you have kids, I recommend giving the Imagine Next set, the Cosmic Chaos thing.
Yeah.
A look-see.
This brings me back to my
Christmas.
This brings me back to my childhood, and Brad, you may be able to relate to this, getting the Sears catalog and going to, I believe, the back where all the toys were.
Oh yes.
And
oh yes,
kind of got the same vibe. I'm that's my word tonight. Apparently, vibe.
He's got the vibe for vibe.
Yeah. All right, so we'll put the links in the show notes if you are interested in these toys to get your kids or get yourself this holiday season. We would love to know what your thoughts are on the stories that we have covered tonight or any of our other shows. Leave us feedback by going to either email galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, or call our voicemail number, which is 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. And Big John from Australia left us a couple of texts. He wasn't sure if it was working for him. He was having some issues. I tried to send one back to him, but it came back mail delivery system failure.
But I'll at least
read you what he wrote. Hi, Big John, just doing a test text. Phone, no, does not seem work. For text from Aus, may need prefix no. And then he wrote another one. Hang on. Maybe that's it. Okay, just one text. But he was testing out the texting. You may have issues from your foreign country if you're not in the U.S., but at least give it a try. The number again is 805-328-3966. Call it, leave a voicemail, or leave us a text message. Either or works. All right, let's move on to this.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
All right. That means it's time for the Craft Corner, a spotlight of a certain kind of alien spacecraft. And, Brad, it was your week to pick the alien spacecraft, so what'd you get?
Well, excuse me. I think I mentioned before that I was a big fan of Babylon 5. I couldn't miss an episode, and if I did, I'd set up my...
Your VCR?
My beta VCR to record it. Because my VHS was no longer working, and I had this beta that I found. So I was recording on that.
Oh, I love that story. That's great.
I had two tapes. One was for X-Files, and one was for Babylon 5.
Sweet.
So, with that said, the cool thing about Babylon 5, and we're going to be talking about the Star Fury fighter, which is the small fighter craft that was housed on Babylon 5 and would be used to protect the ship and maybe inspect the outside of the ship for damage. But the great thing about the Star Fury is that the folks that designed this thought up the concept and how it would work in the rules of the show, actually had a number of tips of the hat to other properties, other movies.
Okay.
And we'll get to those in just a second. But the Star Fury craft was created after Warner Brothers began production of the television series. The initial design of the Star Fury was a collaboration between Steve Berg, who was a freelance designer on the show, and he created a number of possible concepts, and a gentleman named Ron Thornton, co-founder of Foundation Imaging, and they were the group that did the 3D work. And that was one of the cool things about Babylon 5, just to stop the narrative here for a second. The ships were all CG, which was one of the more fascinating things about this, to see a regular TV show that used CG as heavily as Babylon 5 did. He took the original concepts and refined them and detailed them in a program called Lightwave, and that was used to actually create the 3D models of the Star Fury.
I've heard of Lightwave.
Yeah, Lightwave is still being used, and it's a very high-end 3D modeling program. Now, due to the high number of expected craft to appear on the screen, they refined the design so that it had fewer polygons. When you make a 3D figure, it has facets, polygons that create the final project, the final thing that you're creating.
Product.
Whatever that is.
Okay.
And the program that is used to render this needs to take into account the light and where light is positioned, and when it renders it, if something has a lot of polygons on it, it has to do a lot of math to construct this and smooth it and do a lot of things. So in order to keep that time down, that processing time down, you have to reduce the number of polygons. So that's what they ended up having to do for this. Now, the other thing, too, is they used they used an Amiga. Now, Amigas were awesome computers.
Oh, that name rings a bell. I remember those.
Yes. Amiga, my first experience with an Amiga was like 1987 when they kind of hit the American market. The cool thing about the Amiga is it had a very unique architecture with the chipset. It had what was called RISC, and it could process and do things independent of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it could actually think about, you know, two or more things at the same time, whereas other processors of the day did one thing. So an Amiga was actually a far superior computer, but the marketing for it never really caught on, and it ended up, and you know, some of our folks from the UK and whatnot will know of the Amiga. It found more of a footing in the European market and stayed there. I don't know if they're still manufacturing computers, but I know that after they kind of lost the marketing war here, and you know, kind of PC and Macs really kind of held got the toehold on the market, Amiga's kind of retreated back to the Europe. European area.
I wonder if some of that technology was integrated into later machines, like later Macs or later Windows machines.
That's a good question. I'm not sure, but if you look at it this way, and we're talking about Beta, which I recorded this on. Beta was a far superior, and I've droned on about this before, but it was a superior product.
Yeah.
VHS got a better marketing campaign and got in bed with porn and stole the market. But Beta was far superior. So that's how that goes. And to my knowledge, I don't think any of the Beta technology was ever integrated with VHS at all. So it's sad, but sometimes that happens. Now, the interesting thing about the design of the Star Fury, and it had four struts. So if you were to get up from wherever you are right now, stand up and spread your legs apart, say to your shoulder width, and then put your arms up in the air, so it's shoulder width, straight up in the air. That's kind of the design of a Star Fury. So you had two struts on the bottom, two struts on the top, and located at the end of these struts, they had thrusters. And they weren't the main forms of propulsion, but it was designed to, if you wanted to get a quick 180-degree spin, you'd use the thrusters, and it would quick spin you around. And so it had the smaller thrusters, attitude control thrusters. So it had all these different thrusters on it to make it very quick maneuvering type of craft. Now, I'm not going to get into all the specifics of you know, what, how many nozzles and all that stuff. But it had a total of 16 thrusters that they had to work with in the computer animation as well. So they had to, you know, kind of give a little bit of a blue or a burst of whatever and show a thruster move if they had the camera position right on the craft. So it was an incredibly agile fighter. Now, the interesting thing, and back to the beginning of this, is the tips of the hat to other sci-fi films. Unbeknownst to the producers of the show at the time, there was an intentional homage to what Thornton and Berg felt were was the excellent and underutilized design ideas seen in the Gunstar from the 1984 movie The Last Starfighter, which I believe was my last craft pick.
Yeah, it was.
Was the Gunstar. Because that, too, was very a very quick maneuvering ship. It had different thrusters that could spin it around. So they kept that concept for the Star Fury. But the shape of the Star Fury was influenced by an earlier unused design that Steve Berg had used for the movie Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Nice.
So you've got a couple of pieces of pretty hardcore science fiction movie history built into these Star Furies from Babylon 5.
And wasn't also the physics was correct as far as how it was flown?
It was fairly correct. I think there were some discrepancies, but you know, you're going to have that. But it kept the idea that if you were fighting and you were going really fast in one direction, you weren't going to immediately stop and spin around quick. So what would end up happening is somebody would fight and say you were coming towards an object, you could maneuver your ship a little bit to get around it, but then you would spin it 180 degrees and you could shoot at it from behind as it flew away from you. So they tried to keep true to the tactics and the physics in that arena, but there were probably some other things that weren't quite right. But overall, it's been deemed fairly accurate.
I wonder if the technology used to make those ships on Babylon 5 was used later on. I wonder if they like made, I don't know, their technology was able to make it so other shows later on could use the same techniques or whatever to make their spaceships look better, that kind of thing. I wonder.
Maybe, yeah. That's a good question.
Visual effects. We're going to get a visual effects guy on our other podcast, the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, later on in December. Maybe we should ask him.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So make a note of that. Question for him.
All right, will do.
So a lot of aliens on Babylon 5, and I really, really wish that Babylon 5 was streaming someplace, but it's not. You know what? I was just about to dive into it on Netflix a few years ago when they pulled it. I was so pissed off.
Oh, no. There's so many wonderful things about that program. So many wonderful concepts that they delved into, and I'm not sure if it withstands the test of time, but yeah, it's definitely worth watching at least once in your lifetime.
I watched a few episodes here and there, but I was more of a Deep Space Nine person because at the time you had Star Trek Deep Space Nine and Babylon 5. They premiered around the same time and they kind of competed with each other. And being the Trek person that I am, I opted for Deep Space Nine, although I did catch episodes of Babylon 5 once in a while.
Yeah. You know, and I tried, and I was the opposite way. I was a big Star Trek person, but I tried to get into Deep Space Nine. But at a certain point, if you missed episodes, you really were kind of missing some whole bits of what the dialogue was about in some episodes.
Yeah, that was a serialized show. It was a continuous story, so I can understand that totally.
Yeah.
All right, Brad, anything else you want to add to that before we move on?
No, I was looking for a craft, and I came on that, and I saw the history of it, and I'm like, oh, that's a solid pick for a ship.
Yeah, and we learned a lot. We learned about computers and visual effects, and we appreciate it. I, for one, feel smarter.
Well, I'm glad I could help.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Again, the Craft Corner craft this week, the Star Fury Fighter from Babylon 5. That sounds like a kid's toy, a Star Fury Fighter.
Kind of.
From Fisher Price.
It kind of does, for Fisher Price.
All right.
It might be like a Lego set.
What's that, Anessa?
I said it might be a Lego set.
Oh, yeah.
Star Fury for your Lego set.
Wouldn't put it past him at all. Okay, so let's move on to picks. And before, Anessa, you announce what your pick is, this was almost my pick. I was a pick away from this pick, but I opted for my pick. So do your pick, and then I'll do my pick, and we'll explain the whole situation.
Okay. Pick. My pick we've talked about multiple times on the show. It's the movie starring Scarlett Johansson. Came out, what, earlier this year?
Yep.
Called Under the Skin.
And we mentioned Big John earlier. He gave us feedback on that.
Yeah, he gave us feedback on a little bit on the book, a little bit on the movie. He says that the book explains a lot of questions that you may have from the movie. And, yeah, there are a lot of questions that I had at the end of the movie. but the description that Amazon has, because I found it on Amazon Prime, it says it's a movie about a voluptuous woman of unknown origin who combs the highways in search of isolated or forsaken men, luring a succession of lost souls into an otherworldly lair. They are seduced, stripped of their humanity, and never heard from again. And that's, I guess, kind of the chunk of the movie, a fair chunk of the movie, because it starts off a little weird, and it's not really much of a spoiler. You have this guy on a motorcycle, and he's driving around in Scotland, and he stops, walks into a field, picks up some girl. I think she's unconscious at this point, and he puts her on the motorcycle and continues on. And then the next thing you know, there's a nude Scarlett Johansson stripping this person of her clothing and putting them on and then going out and looking for men.
All right.
And, yeah, I was telling Brad earlier, and, you know, like the description kind of talks about how she goes out looking specifically for isolated men, like people that aren't going home to a family or are not hanging out with friends currently or, you know, are living out of a tent or whatever the case may be. And the way that the movie's done, it kind of reminded me of the original Solaris, in that there's a lot of nothing going on in bits. I remember Solaris, you would periodically see the planet and you would see the weird wavy thing going on with the planet and how it was always changing. And that kind of made me think about that, because there was a lot of times where Scarlett Johansson's character would just stop and do nothing. Like she, I guess, would get lost in thought, or she would catch a glimpse of herself in the mirror and stop and just stare for like a good 20, 30 seconds.
You know what they call that?
Not really doing anything. But, she's a narcissist.
They, you know what they call that, Anessa? They call that artsy-fartsy.
It is very artsy-fartsy, and that's one thing that I noticed. I decided to go on to Rotten Tomatoes and see what the critics thought and what just viewers thought. And the critics gave it, like, really high praise. And the viewers gave it 54%. And I think it's because a lot of the viewers were probably expecting a lot more action. In my opinion, I think it got better during the second half of the movie. Although I will say that what was kind of cool is that apparently, as Scarlett Johansson's character, who doesn't have a name, she doesn't have a name, is driving around in this big white van, she stops and she'll ask for directions and she'll talk to people. Apparently, some of the people that she talked to were not actually actors, and I thought that was kind of cool. She just kind of like stopped and like, hey, can you tell me where I can find the M8?
Well, I heard the story that one of the guys that she supposedly had sex with was not an actor either, just somebody off the street. That's what I heard, at least.
I could say spoiler on the sex part, but I'm not gonna.
Oh, sorry. I'm just screwing it up for everybody tonight.
Have you seen the movie, Dave?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Okay. But yeah, there was a lot of downtime, and yeah, it is kind of artsy fartsy. If you think about it that way, like you have to kind of stop and think about like, why is she pausing? Why is she doing this? And it's kind of like she's discovering more about, I guess, more about herself. It becomes kind of a self-discovery type thing, which gets kind of awkward. And then the ending is strange. So
okay. The movie that came to mind when you were describing it is Melancholia. Have you guys seen Melancholia?
That sounds familiar, but
Kiefer Sutherland was in it. It's about another Earth, another planet coming into our neck of the solar system, basically, and it's pretty much the end of the world, and it's all just like a lot of sitting around, showing the scenery, weird music, and it just kind of has, it feels like the same vibe as this, the movie that you're talking about.
Yeah, it. I haven't seen Melancholia. I'm looking at the images and whatnot, and I'm like, yeah, I haven't seen it. It sounds familiar, and I think it was one of those that I wanted to watch, just never got around to it. But yeah, there's a lot of self-discovery with this flick. A lot of pauses, and I guess that's kind of for you to think and whatnot. But I think if they cut out like half of those, the movie would have been like an hour 20, as opposed to like an hour 44 or whatever it is. So it was a little lengthy, but overall it wasn't bad. I recommend giving it a watch. It will leave you with questions. And so now I have to go out and seek the audiobook on YouTube, as Big John suggested. Or I guess I could actually read the book, but I'll go to YouTube. I'll stream it. So, yeah. Under the Skin.
Okay. Thank you very much. I was just doing some research. I was trying to figure out if it was the same director as Melancholia, but it's not.
No, it's not.
I looked
and it's...
Okay.
Pretty sure it's not.
Okay.
Oh, the other thing, too, is you might want to watch it without kids in the room. Just putting it out there. There is boobs and bits and manly bits as well.
All right. So the sex. The sex is in the movie. Okay.
I'm not even going to say anything about the sex.
Okay.
But there are penises and there are boobs.
Okay, sexy parts.
There are sexy parts.
Okay. All right, got it. Well, I almost watched this. It was almost my pick. I was up on Netflix looking in the science fiction section. I saw a bunch of new movies. And I saw Under the Skin. I'm like, you know what? That's way too mainstream for me. Let me try this other one called Almost Human. And man, I wish I would have picked Under the Skin.
Yeah, you could have seen butts and boobs.
I know.
And male dongs.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm going to watch it eventually. But Almost Human is the movie that I picked. And it's also, well, obviously about aliens. And it's also about an alien that is on a killing rampage. It was the directorial debut of a guy by the name of Joe Bagos. It's a 2013 sci-fi horror film, and supposedly it's based on a true story about an event that happened back in the 70s. No, 70? Yeah, 70s or 80s in southern Maine. And here's the description from Wikipedia. 2 years ago, Mark was kidnapped and taken to parts unknown. Upon his return, Mark's personality is completely changed. His friends Seth and Jen decide to investigate Mark's mysterious disappearance and reappearance, but are soon met with a series of grisly murders. And that description is totally inaccurate to actually what the story is about. The story is about, it starts off in the woods, and Mark's friend, what's his name? Seth comes rolling into his cabin, claiming that their other friend, who they never mention again in the film, was taken by a light in the sky, just zipped up, sucked up into the sky by this light. So Mark doesn't believe him, but then weird things start happening at the cabin. He's sucked up into the sky. Flash forward 2 years, the two remaining characters that were at the cabin, Seth and Jen was Mark's girlfriend at the time. Their lives are continuing on. And then Mark reappears in the woods, naked, found by some hunters. Spoiler alert, he kills the two hunters and goes on a murderous rampage. And interesting scenes in this movie. One, for example, this thing comes out of Mark's mouth, kind of like a tube-type thing, and it is used to... I'm trying to put this the right way, impregnate Jen. So the tube from Mark's mouth, the alien Mark, goes into Jen in a certain spot. They show that.
There you go.
Yeah. I like this movie for its cheese because they showed so many different ways of killing people. There were... somebody ran somebody's head over with a car. There was axes involved. There was shooting involved. There was knives cutting people's carotid artery. There was any possible way that you could kill somebody was shown in this film. Also, you could really tell this is like a kind of a new filmmaker because of the liberal use of swear words. Like, you know how in life people use the F word once in a while? These guys used it all the time. Like in places that you wouldn't necessarily need F words. And you can kind of tell when it's a new director by their use, or that it's a independent or cheap film by the use of swear words. At least that's in my experience. I've discovered that. But it's called Almost Human, not to be confused with that TV show, that kick-ass TV show that was on last year. And that is my pick this week here on the Alien Invasion Podcast. So,
nice.
Any questions before we move on to Brad's? No?
I can't think of any.
Okay. If you like cheeseball, you like this film. I can guarantee it. All right, moving on.
These balls are pretty tasty.
Final pick, Brad. What do you got?
Well, I decided to. I saw you guys were doing like feature films, so I went with the short film route this time, and I found an interesting 7-minute film from a filmmaker, independent Italian filmmaker. Which is interesting because there isn't any dialogue per se, and there's just a couple of written items that you see, but it's in English. So had I not necessarily if it hadn't necessarily been written up that it was from an Italian director, I wouldn't have known. It's called Aliens Night, sci-fi short film, and here's some details about it. It was shot at a zero budget and without an acting troupe. So it focuses on one person. There's one actress.
Huh.
And it's shot using an HD camera and using a personal computer. The writing and the shooting and the editing and the 3D modeling and the animation and the composing and the post-production are all done by the director, Andrea Ricca?
Italian.
Excuse me, Andrea, it's Italian. R-I-C-C-A is the spelling of her last name. And you can go to her web. Excuse me?
No, I said I don't know how to say her last name. Ricca or Ricca?
Yeah. My guess is maybe it's Ricca. You can go to her website, Andrea Ricca, Andrea, R-I-C-C-A, .it.
Andrea Ricca for that jar on the shelf. Sorry. Sorry.
Wow. Wah, 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 wah.
Sorry, that deserves.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Anyways. it got good reviews, and the critics also from the Historical Hammer Film Society, Fright Film Fest, Slice of Sci-Fi, and CG Brothers, all have given this pretty good praise. And the story, 7-minute story, like I said, tells the story of a close encounter between a female scientist and some aliens that have arrived on Earth.
Hmm.
And the aliens are CG. The spacecraft is CG. And the actress has to kind of interact with creatures that aren't necessarily there. And that's very, I mean, we hear, you know, like Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow or 300 or, you know, some of the other films that are mostly green screen. That's very difficult to do. In this particular case, it looks like everything was had been storyboarded and shot in a fashion so that the shots could have the CG added on later.
Okay.
So the film was kind of the video was reprocessed to add the CG elements in. So there's no green screen type of setup for this at all. It's for a one-person show. It's a very, very interesting and no dialogue, like I mentioned before. So all the action, everything that happens, you need to pay attention because there are certain elements that come back later on in the film. So it's one of those things where you really want to be paying attention, give it your full attention while you're watching it. And yeah, tells a very interesting story.
How long is it?
7 minutes.
That's easy to digest.
Yeah, and we'll have the link in the show notes to YouTube so that you can watch it. And if you go to her website, the AndreaRica.it, she's got other short films that she's done. And she did something which – and I didn't check them all out, but based on the movie – she has movie posters made for each short film that she's done. And it looks like she's done a version of Critters.
Oh, cool.
Which is an 80s alien horror film, but she's done some horror, and those are the two main genres, sci-fi and horror, that you'll find. And she's got over 5, but I can't remember the exact number. So, yeah, definitely check out her site and check out her independent short films that she's made, based on what I saw for Aliens Night. It's going to be worth watching.
If you are a fan of short films, you may want to follow io9.com in your social feeds, because every once in a while, at least once a week, they'll post a really good short film. And this sounds like something that they would throw up on io9.com.
Yeah, it would definitely fit in that frame. Absolutely.
All right, cool. Let's review our picks for the week. We had Aliens Night, short film. We had My Piece of Crap, Almost Human. No, it wasn't a piece of crap. It was good. And then Under the Skin was Anessa's pick. We'll have the links in the show notes on the podcast if you're interested. All right, that's going to pretty much do it for this edition of The Alien Invasion. It's episode number 125. Go to our website for our social links to Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. It's galacticnetcasts.com. Feedback, again, 805-328-3966 or galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. You can subscribe to us. We've got the link on the website, galacticnetcast.com. But also search for us on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. And that pretty much does it. Final thoughts. Let's start with Brad.
Woohoo for Naked Scarlett Johansson and Under the Skin.
Can't wait for her in Avengers 2. Looking forward to that. She's not going to be naked,
sure,
obviously.
Be fully clothed.
Yeah.
Yeah, she will be fully clothed for that, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right. And Anessa, what's your final thought?
Long live Longmire.
Oh, hey, I saw your post earlier. It's coming to the old Netflix, right?
Yep.
It is. Netflix has picked it up for the next season. So we finally get resolution from the season's cliffhanger.
Do you know if that's going to be the only season, or are they going to do more than one?
So far, I've only heard about the next season. Haven't heard if they're going to do more afterwards, or if they just wanted to do this as a way to give people closure, because there was a big uproar about Longmire being canceled, and a lot of people took to the social medias and voiced their displeasure. And so because the actors of Longmire were still under contract for another year, the production company went around shopping the show to other stations and Netflix and Amazon and whatnot. And a couple of weeks ago or so, I had heard that they were in negotiations with Netflix, but they were having a hard time coming to any sort of agreement. And apparently they finally reached one, and we get more Longmire, and I'm excited because, man, that cliffhanger, I was going to be pissed if it didn't get picked up for at least one more season.
All right, good news. Congratulations to you and to the Longmire fans and crew.
Woohoo!
All right, thanks for joining us, everybody, and we will talk to you next time.
Yay! Bye.
You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.GalacticNetcasts.com.